One of the famous songs of the Beatles was called All You Need Is Love. It came out back in 1967. But you've probably heard it, and the lyrics of the song are very, very simple. There's one line of the song that is repeated many, many times. All you need is love, all you need is love, da 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 da, over and over. As if there were nothing more to say. As if there was nothing else that needs to be said. All you need is love. Well, I don't know what the Beatles thought was the origin of that idea about love, but it sounds very, very similar to what St. Paul says in today's second reading. This is from chapter 13 of his letter to the Romans. Let's take another look at this remarkable passage. St. Paul says, owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. It's quite a thing to say. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. Nothing? We don't have to do anything else? What about paying taxes? What about paying our rent? What about our responsibilities for our families and for our jobs, our country? What about our obligations to God Himself? Once we bring up the idea of our duty to God, naturally we think of the Ten Commandments. Well, St. Paul has already thought of that. And so he continues in this reading. The commandments, and then he lists a few of them, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other commandment there may be, he doesn't even bother to list all of them. He says whatever they are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no evil to the neighbor. Hence, love is the fulfillment of the law. That's what he says. Love is the fulfillment of the law. When we love, we do no evil to our neighbor. So it seems that what the Beatles were singing about 50 years ago, or more than 50 years ago, was actually true. All you need is love. Love is the fulfillment of the law. Or if you want to put it the other way around, to fail to love is to fail to fulfill the law. Sin is always a failure of love. Sin is always missing something. What is it missing? Love. Either not enough love, or misdirected love, or distorted love, or no love at all. That's sin. Well, all that sounds pretty good. It's hard to disagree with the supremacy of love, after all. However, sometimes it's hard to love. Some people are hard to love. Especially people who harm us, who do wrong to us. Especially people who do wrong to us again and again. They're very hard to love. How can we love them? How can we put this simple command into practice? Well, that's the topic that Jesus addresses in today's gospel. The right way to deal with people who sin against us. That is, people who don't seem to love us. People whom we find very hard to love. The secret, by the way, doesn't say it explicitly, but I'll just tell you the secret. The secret is to deal with them the way God deals with us. That is, to be always determined to choose what is good for the other person, as God always does what is good for us. Anyway, this is what Jesus says here. This is Matthew chapter 18. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Actually, in this passage, Jesus outlines four steps in the process of what to do if someone sins against us. the first step is the one I just read. Tell the offender privately. If that doesn't work, well, then bring in one or two others. If that doesn't work, then tell the church, the wider community. If that doesn't work, well, then show the person that he's excluding himself from the community. But for right now, I'm going to only focus on the first step. The first step in the process of correcting someone who sins against us, what we call fraternal correction, the first step of love, the first step of fulfilling the law. Why just focus on the first step? Because it's the hardest one, and it's the one that we don't do very well. It's the one that if we did this better, we wouldn't even need the other three steps most of the time. Well, it sounds simple enough, this first step. But it's not that simple. This is exactly what we don't do very often. The first step is to go and talk to the person who has offended us in private. Just you and him alone, Jesus says. What do you do when someone offends you? Okay, if we're honest, we have to admit, sometimes we just react, blow up. If we have short temper, we blow up, we strike back, we retaliate. We tell that person what he did. That's not what Jesus is talking about here. That's not telling him his fault between you and him alone. That's getting back at him for what he did to you. Think for a moment. I told you that the secret is to treat people the way God treats us. Think for a moment about what God does when we sin. When we sin against him, when we sin against others. It may seem at first like he doesn't do anything. He certainly doesn't blow up at us. He doesn't strike us with a lightning bolt or something like that. And he doesn't expose our sin to everybody to humiliate us. No, what God does is he speaks to us privately. The very thing that he tells us to do. He prods our conscience. He awakens our inner awareness that we have done something wrong. It's a very private way of communication. The most private, in fact. Just God and me. Just God speaking to my conscience. No one even knows. No one else knows. And that's exactly the first step that he advises us to take with one another. Speak to the person privately. Okay, so I go back to the question I asked. What do you do when someone offends you? And we can already eliminate blowing up at people. Blowing up at the person is not the best response. Another common reaction that we have to be wary of is no reaction, silence. We don't say anything. We just keep it inside. That seems better, doesn't it? Better than blowing up. At least it seems easier most of the time not to get involved, not to rock the boat, not to make things worse. But that's not what Jesus says here. He says, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Why? Isn't it better to just let it go? Well, some things, if they're insignificant, yes, let them go. But if it's a real sin, if it's a real offense, if we're really upset by it, go and tell him his fault between him and you alone. Why? Because that's what love moves us to do. Genuine love moves us to do. All you need is love. If we love someone, we don't let him go down the wrong path. Even if it's hard for us to point it out. If we love someone, we point out the fault. Not to get back at him, but to help him. I mean, maybe he doesn't even know what he did. Or maybe he doesn't even know the effect of what he did or what he said. Who's going to tell him? I should tell him. Between me and him alone. Jesus explains why we talk to our offending neighbor rather than simply sitting in silence. This is what Jesus says. If he listens to you, you have won over your brother. Meaning, you have won him back to God. You have helped him share in the victory of God over sin. That's love. That's what we want everyone to have, right? If we love someone, we want them to share in God's victory over sin. So to sit in silence is to prevent people from sharing in that victory. Now, we eliminate blowing up at people. We eliminate being silent all the time. There's one other very common response to sin or to perceived offenses that we have to avoid. Instead of telling our brother in private, what do? We tell everyone else, except him. You know what that's called? Gossip. Gossip. Chismis. Magiging mga chismosa tayo. Mga chismosa. Chismis or gossip is so appealing because it gives us a chance to attack the person indirectly. We get it out. Oh, you know what she said to me? You know what he did to me? And the person who offended us isn't there, so he's not going to defend himself or fight back or give his side of what really happened. We can just dump it all out on somebody else. Gossip. Does it resolve the issue? No. Let me ask a more important question. Is it love? No. It's not love. Gossip is a failure to love. It does not fulfill the law. It makes the original problem worse because it spreads it to others. Others who, it's not even their business. They don't even, or they shouldn't even, want to know about private problems that have come up. So what will happen when our neighbor learns that we have been talking about him behind his back? Well, he'll be even more likely to offend us because now he's angry about what we did to him. So let's go back to what St. Paul says and what the Beatles song implies. Every commandment is summed up in this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. All you need is love, the song says. If we love, we follow the way of God. God who is love. We choose what is good for the other, even if it's difficult, even if it's risky, even if there's no guarantee it's going to work. Love moves us to take that first step in the process of fraternal correction, which means starting with approaching the person in private. Jesus, at the end of today's gospel, says something that actually applies to this private conversation. He says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. When we speak privately to a brother, a sister, about an issue that has come up between us, God is there in our midst. Love is there in our midst. When we strive to love, when we strive to respond with love, it is God Himself who has inspired us and who's present with us. I know it gets messy sometimes, but God is not intimidated by getting messy. He wants us to strive to love. He wants us to be like Himself. Whatever other commandment there is, they're all summed up in this. Love your neighbor as yourself.